Welcome back to another podcast with the Legal Geeks. I'm Jessica Meterson, here as always with my blogging buddy, Josh Gilliland. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hello, hello.
And we are here for our second half of our discussion about Jessica Jones, the second season. It was so good, and oh my good Lord, covered so many issues, we needed to do a two-parter on it. So if you haven't heard our first piece, you should take a listen to that one, and we are here to discuss roughly, I think, the second half.
Sounds right. We might have actually gone up to 9, but there's a, let's just say the middle.
That could be somewhere in the middle. So, and I have to say, you know, first thoughts, and I think I said this with the first one too, I'm a huge fan of Kristen Ritter, love Carrie Ann Moss, you know, love the idea of all of this, so very into Jessica Jones. But on the back half here, the unrelenting, nonstop, just misery, you know, just depressing thing after a horrible thing with outbreak, without relief. It got to be a lot and really too much by the end. I was just like, oh my God, when I finished, it was neat, and I like what they did with the second season arc, but I'm just like, good Lord, that was too depressing.
Yeah, there's also the stupid decision-making by a lot of characters. That's like, really? When did Trish take a stupid pill? Why is Malcolm being self-destructive? It's Jerry Hogarth, yeah, she's dangerous and does bad life choices all the time, but like, hey, I'm going to go encourage someone to commit murder. That stuff, it's like, and Jessica deciding to ride shotgun with her mom, it's like, dude, throttle back. Like, you should be making better life choices.
Yeah, everybody was doing Malcolm, probably, to be fair, out of all of them, I'd say Malcolm was making the most minor of the bad decisions, right? Like, his was the sort of stuff that actually a lot of people could probably relate to. Like, you know, can't switch one addiction for another. You keep going back to a partner that you know you can't trust, but you just can't stop yourself, and you think, no, this time I can trust that person. So at least Malcolm's stupidity was kind of like, we can all relate to stuff. But the others, well, and actually I can't say that, Jerry Hogarth, I don't know that hers was stupidity. Hers was really pissed off and I'm going to do some bad things because I'm really mad. Which, to be fair, what was done to her, and we can talk about this now, so spoiler alerts, everybody. But basically, she thought that she had been healed from her terrifying, basically no coming back diagnosis of ALS. So I get that being given that hope and then having that taken away and basically being given your life sentence, your death sentence again, would be emotionally devastating. But Jerry being Jerry, she did not handle that in a positive, productive manner.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Being a lawyer, you know how to take revenge on someone who's wronged you. And I say that metaphorically with, like, we're going to file papers, here's how we're going to sue them, here's how we're...
And all, you're going to use all legally available remedies. That's the language we always like to use. You will take recourse in all legally available ways. But yes, they need to be legal.
As opposed to, I'm going to go to the one character who's appeared in all of the Marvel Netflix shows.
This was... Oh, no way, really?
Yeah, he has little cameos in each one. Normally gets beat up. This is the only time where he doesn't get beat up by anybody. But he, you know, he sells an unregistered firearm to Jerry, which is a crime. And she then manipulates the homeless nurse who manipulated her to go kill the con artist. It's just, she did it in a way so she didn't technically murder him, but she did cause his death. And talk about, it's still a crime of moral turpitude that should get her disbarred. So it's just, I have a hard time with the character of Jerry Hogarth because she represents every negative stereotype of a lawyer cranked up to 11. Bad life habits, just being super self-destructive. And we're supposed to uphold the law and represent the best of what the legal system can do for people. And she's the antithesis of that.
Well, and in fact, let's go back to the cameo. So she gets a gun. Basically, it's clear that it's an untraceable gun. Presumably, the identification number on it has been filed off, all of that. So she gets an untraceable gun. So I know California has better gun laws than some other state, most of all, as some would violate, hopefully, assuming California has reasonable gun control laws, it would violate that. But then it's not even so much that she's buying it. She's essentially trading that for her legal services in the future, which I'm pretty sure has to violate all kinds of bar rules. And then, since it's come up in the news lately, to the extent that this the guy who gave her the gun is basically kind of an ongoing client of hers, it's clear that he views her sort of his lawyer when he needs one, and says, I may need you again soon. To the extent that he would try to claim that some sort of privilege between him and his attorney. There is, and it's been getting a lot of attention lately, but we've all known this. There are certain exceptions to the attorney-client privilege, which is a privilege that otherwise I guard quite zealously. I'm sure you do too, Josh. But the attorney-client privilege, which normally makes sure that conversations between attorneys and their clients stay protected from discovery, you do have an exception to that when those conversations involve, it's basically called a crime-fraud exception. So if something in those conversation relates to an ongoing or future crime or fraudulent event, the privilege can be pierced. So that's just something that some of our leaders don't seem to quite understand at the moment, but it is a big exception to the law. It's often used in mob cases, like with obviously, you always think of who was a famous mobster lawyer, Robert Duvall, played the I can never say that word in Italian. The Italian word for lawyer or whatever, consigliere, is that it?
That sounds right, and again, New York has a robust crime fraud exception to the attorney-client privilege. California does, because lawyers aren't supposed to facilitate crimes. So no matter who your client is, you're not supposed to join them in an adventure to commit a crime.
And you don't get to protect the conversations if you do.
Nope, and no, the attorney-client privilege is alive and well, and so is the exception of the crime fraud. So everything's working the way it's supposed to, which is why
we
have FBI agents doing a privilege review right now to figure out what isn't privileged. But hey, we'll talk about document review another time.
But anyway, so that is Jerry, who is doing very best stuff. She also is basically, I guess, blackmailing her partners into upping her buyout as well. Of course, again, she has knowledge, although I guess they kind of admit that's really just a whiff of knowledge, about one of her partners conducting illegal activities, which, again, she would actually have an ethical obligation to report, and she ignores that and instead uses blackmail, which again is also illegal, to get a bigger buyout from her partners. So she's just going all over the place, breaking laws left and right.
Yeah, and talk about picking the wrong fight. When one of the three partners has 62% of the firm's business, do you really take a shot at her? Now, there's this old maxim from Shakespeare that if you strike the king, kill him. And you better have that kill shot ready to go if you're going to do something like that.
That's right. If you come for the king or if you come for the queen, best not miss.
Yeah. And well, they did wing her pretty well. So it wasn't a kill shot. And that's the problem. The fact that one of the partners, okay, so blatant homosexual and he goes to a gay bar, that's his lifestyle choice, and that's his blackmail issue because of his family. But the other partner is full-on Panama Papers bad money laundering. So one's not a crime. He's just got a therapy issue to work out and needs to decide what's the
a right... A marital thing. Issue to work out, yeah.
What's the right direction for his life? Going to give him some sympathy and understanding because he needs to make some choices. The other partner, not so much.
Yes.
Not so much. She would get disbarred. Like, that's not what we do.
And probably sent to prison.
Yeah, which, again, I'd be okay with.
Mm-hmm.
Because lawyers who facilitate crimes, that's what should happen to them. But but let's not get into bank fraud and you know, the third-party contracts where somebody is the beneficiary of an NDA who doesn't know about it. By the way, thank you for doing that for me. Totally appreciate that.
I owe you one. Which, according to ethics CLE, I took the other day too, under both Minnesota and New York professional responsibility laws, laws that govern the behavior of lawyers, there are also only certain limited funds that you can actually advance on a client's behalf. So yes, paying off a settlement on behalf of your client would violate, I don't know if that violates any actual criminal statutes, but it would violate the rules of professional responsibility in New York and Minnesota.
And so, I'm pretty sure California too. It's like, hey, you're bound to this agreement I didn't tell you about. Anywho, let's talk about Trish going crazy. And
speaking of bad decisions.
So I'm going to kidnap a dude and force him to do experiments on me. Oh. Give me superpowers because apparently I don't feel I have enough self-worth. What the hell? Dude, this is the part where the writing bothered me, because that's, we have characters just doing irrational decision-making of, I need superpowers too.
And really bad things. Yeah.
Irresponsible. So that bothered me, because again, she was committing crimes. And
yes,
and then going like, you just took the crazy pill. I'm like, I get if the inhaler was causing you to make bad decisions, okay, we can, did she understand the wrongfulness of her actions? We get into that. But when you get into a coordinated plan to kidnap somebody in order to give them superpowers, that doesn't sound like the insanity defense anymore, because it's a coordinated plan. And that's a stretch.
She knew what she was doing. She knew it was wrong. I mean, that's why she lied to Malcolm and also kidnapped Malcolm. I mean, she knocks him out, ties him up, and puts him in the trunk of her car as she's driving around all day. Yeah, I agree. Trish, really, I was disappointed. I get that apparently, and there's a hint of this at the end, that she did get something. So I'm like, I get they want to add that to the storyline, but the for season three, but the way they did it, and with this desperate neediness to somehow feel that power through that, was disappointing, and it was so stupid. It was. I did not like that storyline, but definitely the kidnapping. Certainly, obviously, the one thing it did show, though, was that at the end of the day, was it Greg or Gary? What's the doctor's name?
I think Gary, but...
Gary, I think so. All right, I'm blanking.
It's been a while since I watched it.
I just finished, so I should know. But anyway, it also shows that at the end of the day, as they love to show in superhero movies and comic books and everything, the evil scientist genius, he just can't stop tinkering.
It's... It makes me want to hit my head on the desk. You know, it's... Because you then get into the issue, like, if she's going to argue the insanity defense for kidnapping him, that means she didn't have the mental capacity to consent to the medical experiment. So it's then another ethical issue for him, but he already had a laundry list of...
He was already hosed, yeah.
Big, big issues there. In the comics, Trish is Hellcat, and she's one of the oldest Marvel characters, because if I remember right, Patsy was dates back to, like, either World War II or the 1950s, and she was one of the characters from that era to transition over to the modern era beginning in the 60s. But I'm not sure the first appearance of Hellcat. I don't remember it. But she's appeared in She-Hulk as like a She-Hulk's private eye and close friend. So I'm all for seeing Hellcat. I think that's cool. But the way that Trish literally goes off the deep end with all the kidnapping and all that bad stuff, and then figures out where Jessica and her mom will go, and then does the expert kill shot.
Yes.
With a handgun on a, you know, from the ground, hitting somebody in some arc on a Ferris wheel. It's not a, that's like sniper type And there's no defense of others. There's no legal justification for what she did other than she murdered Jessica's mom in front of Jessica and a reckless shot that could have killed Jessica as well. So this is just part of the laundry list of issues that I had of Trish acts really irresponsibly.
Well, and the whole, actually, I thought that was interesting, right? That she's the one to shoot and kill the mom, obviously in front of poor Jessica, who's just like, good Lord, Jessica can't get a break. And it is, I mean, truly a vigilante execution is what it is. I have decided that this person has done bad things and is a future threat, and therefore I get to execute them, which is a problem. But what I found concerning, actually, was that the police show up and seem to be like, oh, thank God, she's already dead. We don't need to worry about it. And like, good job, Jessica. And I don't know if they wanted to assume or if they were just pretending that, first of all, obviously, I'm sure Ballistics person would be like, no, it was not Jessica who shot her, yada, yada. But they're like, we're not going to look too closely, and we're going to pretend that Jessica was struggling with her mom and had to kill her in self-defense. I'm assuming that's what they were all like. We're just going to buy into this kind of willful fiction. Because otherwise, I'm like, no. There's this, you know, again, a person who killed people, so yes, she needs to be put in prison, yes to all of that, but like, you don't just get to be like, ooh, that's one less problem on our hands now that she's dead, which seemed to be the cop's approach at the end. That was also bad on the cop's end.
Yeah, that was beyond lazy. It's like, wow, she got shot in the back of the head? How'd that work
out?
Good
job, Jessica, yeah.
Did you put your hand behind her head and pull the trigger at point blank range? Because then the skull exploding would be different because mm-hmm. of the bullet having to travel a distance first being at point blank range. Yeah, that bothered me as well as like, I hope no one looks at this. And mm-hmm. there's no, they skip an autopsy. Like it's the most lazy police investigation ever. And,
yeah.
So that bothered me.
Yes.
You know, speaking of mom, you know, the idea of her going off to the raft, this is the first show that really is referenced, you know, what's depicted in Captain America Civil War with the giant submarine prison island that they have.
Right.
That's the abomination of due process because they seem to take people there without trials. It seems grossly unconstitutional. And there's like no right of parole, visitation, or any of those things. And
for right.
some of the super beings that exist in the MCU, it makes sense that they go to the raft just because they don't have the facilities anyplace else. You know, it's kind of like us with
Gitmo. Hold them, yeah.
It's like, you know, Gitmo is still there because we still don't know what to do because we don't want to put them on the mainland because it makes everyone freak out because senators go like, hey, it's a great idea. I don't want it in my state. And when all 100 of them do that, we end up with Gitmo. So I get it, but the due process issues with U.S. citizens are screaming. And Jessica's mm-hmm. mom actually has some really good defenses that should be litigated for the insanity defense for what happened to her. So I appreciate that they mentioned the raft. It opens up lots of issues that we could get into more in depth with. But yeah, it's a mixed season. I liked it more than season one because of the subject matter in season two is just a little bit easier to watch. But well acted. I have a problem with some of the inconsistent and irresponsible behavior of characters.
Yes, the poor decision making. I did think, and again, I actually did chicken out on watching the rest of season one because it was getting so dark and the subject matter. I was like, I can't handle it this way. But it is ironic that like probably the lightest moments in season two were when Kilgrave is talking to her. I'm like, so now he's the comic relief. Like, that's how dark this show has gotten, that he's the comic relief. So I'm hoping if season three could be a little bit, like just moments of a little bit of comic relief, or not, like Jessica gets some victories or some moments of happiness, just a little something, because I can't take just unrelenting misery for an entire another season.
That's why The Defenders was a lot of fun, and having all of them paired together, because it's shorter. There are less episodes, which I think all the Marvel shows should switch to that, because there's some episodes that just seem to be filler. And the only one that didn't happen in is Punisher, which is ironic. But it worked, and there was humor interacting with them, and it wasn't all this giant existential crisis of self-torture with everyone. There's actually, the episode where they're at the Chinese restaurant is brilliant, because they're eating dinner, having a conversation for the majority of the episode. It's like, I could use a little bit more of that. It's like, let have them act, have great
Right.
Stories. Not everything has to be an emotionally traumatic experience for everyone, including the
Which is ironic, by the way, that we're saying this about Marvel. And of course, one of the things about the incredibly expansive Marvel universe right now is that they do have so many different avenues, and they can try out different things. So not everything needs to be Joss Whedon quippy Avengers. I don't need Tony Stark and his little quips and every single Marvel thing. But generally, the Marvel movies or Marvel shows do have a bit of that. Yeah, kind of funny lines, a little bit of humor. DC is the one who does the dour, but this was pretty darn dour. So maybe I'll up it a little bit in season 3.
Yeah, other than that, it was amazing. So
but it was good, and I did think the stuff with, the mom and, Jessica, and I do like backstory stuff, but now it'll be interesting to see in season 3, maybe get past some of that and kind of just do a little bit lighter. So I'm going to give season 3 a chance, but I can't do this dark again for another 13 episodes.
Yeah, how about 8 really good ones that are action-adventure that's a nice noir detective story, and we're done. So, but that's me. So with that,
I'm there with you.
Yes. So everyone, thank you for listening. If you enjoy us, please leave a review on iTunes. And until next time, stay geeky, America. Stay geeky.